We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That Zach Zaidman on the call just the other night. Kyle Hendricks tried to pick off a runner at first base, and Anthony Rizzo couldn't get in front of a slightly wild throw, something you're not used to Rizzo not being able to do. And Jed Hoyer mentioning that when he was on just the other morning with Connor McKnight and Rich Campbell sitting in for Dan Bernstein. Welcome back in Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Schabkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Hoyer mentions there that it's going to be great for Rizzo mentally. Get away from the game for a few days, all-star break, and be able to just clear his head. Stop thinking about things so much. I mean, it might be mental because I'm sure when you're an athlete, and especially you're an extraordinary athlete that's been a multiple-time All-Star, and you have the expectations that not only Anthony Rizzo has for himself, but his teammates and his team and fans have for him, yeah, it probably does wear on you mentally when you're struggling. But it's like, I watched that game yesterday against San Francisco, or really the series against San Francisco, and it's not like it's just, oh, yep, he's through a slump. Like, he looks slow adjusting to pitches. He doesn't look normal himself that way. Looks fooled often, and then you see him do as simple as something as run to first base on a weak hit ground ball that he thought he was going to beat by three steps getting to first base. And I mean, he pretty much gets beaten by two and a half, three steps on the throw to first base on that play. And it's just, it doesn't look mental to me as much as it does look like physically it's taking a toll on what has been a great career so far. But I mean, this has been a disastrous 2018 so far for Anthony Rizzo.
Like you referenced earlier, I mean, he's not a small guy. You know, he's a fairly big, he's about my size. He's 6'3", listed at 240. So, I mean, I'm about 6'3", 250 at this point. So, I mean, Rizzo's a pretty big dude. And if it is a back issue that continues to ail him and he's had some issues with it before, then yes, that can be difficult to recover from, especially with as much torque as he does tend to put. You know, it's not like he's got one of these longer swings that doesn't necessarily torque the back in a way that, you know, like by comparison, let's say a Mark McGwire kind of swing, that there's not as much twist in the trunk as what Rizzo, especially when he starts to choke up on the bat and people are trying to get in on his hands and he really turns on the ball. There is a lot of torque and pressure that gets put on his trunk. So, I mean, who knows? You know, this is just guesstimating, obviously, right now, which can in some ways be irresponsible. I wouldn't do it like during the game. It's one of the game broadcaster sort of rules is, well, you don't guess at the injury. You still hear guys do it. But we have no idea. And that part of this conjecture is just trying to figure out what could be going wrong for this extended period of time. And he was bad at the plate, or at least he was substandard at the plate for a while. And now this month, he's dropped off a cliff. And it's just such an odd thing to see where, you know, it's one thing for the batting average to be low and for the, you know, the exit velocity has apparently been okay from, you know, what folks are reporting. You know, exit velocity has been fine. But overall, for him, especially not just at the plate, but like we've been talking about here at the infield, to not look as fluid, as nimble, as mobile. And, you know, we're not going to compare him to Javi Baez rounding the base pass, but for him to look like it. I had to look up the name of Tom Berenger's guy from Major League. It was Jake Taylor. For him to look like, you know, Taylor Buns, and he lays it down and the infielder curses and he's trying to come in and field the ball. And you just see the slow motion of Berenger's hair just kind of flapping in the wind as he's lumbering down the base path. For Rizzo to look like that, he certainly has been more nimble than that, at least here in recent years. So it's just an odd thing, and it makes you wonder, where has this come from?
Yeah, it seems like it's very fast, and I know he's a guy that...
And he's not at fall-off-a-cliff age.
No, he's not. He's 28.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's a guy that late in the year, the last couple of years, you've heard fatigue. Brian's been crystal clear about that. Rizzo's been the same way. If you read the Tom Verducci book, there was always that cute story that he started swinging Matt Caesar's bat against the Dodgers in the NLCS in 2016. It's, oh, it was all for luck, and it was because it was the same model bat, and it just was something for good luck because Rizzo's bat wasn't working. And you read that book and you find out that, okay, yeah, it's a cute little story, but he was swinging that bat because it was lighter and he simply was fatigued and he wasn't, his bat speed wasn't there with the bat that he was used to swinging by the end of the year. And so you have that documented. You have that history of him, this being a thing before, of running out of gas as the year goes on. I can't help but think that it's just, I hate being speculatory on that. But what else could it be? 28 years old, you don't just fall off a cliff baseball-wise unless something else usually is. Like, right. That's usually the way it kind of works. And maybe it is as simple as 4 days, 5 days for the All-Star break. Now, the Cubs are the only team, them and the Cardinals, they play Thursday after the All-Star game.
I just do want to make sure you heard me. Speculative.
Speculative?
Yes.
Not speculatory?
No.
Speculatory is a fun word to say, though, even if it's not one.
It sounds really enjoyable. Speculatory. But it's kind of fun.
Isn't it?
It's kind of like ginormous.
Right.
Ginormous is a fun word that doesn't exist, but it's fun.
Or like zillions.
Ooh.
Zillions isn't a real thing, but that's fun to say.
What I think about sometimes with money, because money and numbers are apparently infinite. So if numbers are infinite, then every dollar value for any word you make up, in theory, should exist at some point, right? Like there should, like I have speculatory $1 million in the bank. If
I
numbers
like
are infinite,
speculatory
there must be,
zillion dollars.
Yes, I have speculatory zillion dollars.
It's a Nick
dollars
Shepkowski
in the bank.
English system. I told you long ago that I was never going to be confused for an English teacher. It's a public school education in Grundy County that I can thank for that.
Cody Westerlin, you are a gentleman and a scholar.
Exactly.
for editing whatever Shep sent you to put on the website.
It looks like a third
and put it in a
handwriting.
Form that people were willing to click on and read.
That's right. At record written, I don't know about record
a yeoman's
rates,
effort.
But,
from-
yeah, Cody earned his paycheck this week whenever he has to break down a column that I throw his
way. I'm sorry to break your train of thought.
It's okay. It's all right. Rather you do that. I don't even know what I was talking about. Something with Anthony Rizzo and his back. I don't know. Is it even important? 312-644.
Throw some speculatory numbers out
That's
there.
That's right. Yeah, speculatory jump to conclusions or something with that. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number to call. We go out to Woodridge. Patrick's been holding. He's next up on the score. What's up tonight, Pat? Hello, Patrick.
What up, Pat?
Hey, so I was calling in. So you were talking about his back issue and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that he went to the DL with that. And he was open about it in April. And a lot of people are talking like this slump is unforeseen with Rizzo. I think I disagree with that because he tends to get into deep funks. So I pulled up his numbers from May 1st. I know picking end points and start points is, you know, subjective. But from May 1st until now, he's been an 816 OPS guy. And a 116 weighted runs created guy. Last year, for his first two full months of the year, which is about a 30 at bat less sample size, he was a 825 OPS guy and a 115 weighted runs created plus guy. So he's been in these 25-30 game funks before, and I know what you're saying with the defense and that pickoff the other night was brutal, and he doesn't look mentally locked in. But we've seen him get in these deep funks before, and if he, you know, gets a few days off and I don't see why he couldn't be a 2+ WAR player in the second half and, you know, basically takes off back to where, you know, he's been the last few years.
Yeah, appreciate the telephone call there. And just to throw it back in your face, I guess, of the, oh, well, his OPS since whichever date it was that you listed there has been down versus his career numbers. Like, he's had an awful, disastrous, terrible start here to July. And hopefully with the All-Star break and some time off, that changes. But it's like, okay, so he gets off to the slow start, goes on the DL in April, only was hitting 158 at the end of April, had an OPS all the way up at 431 at the end of April. So May comes around, and one of the quotes, I don't know if it was from him or if it was from Hoyer or Epstein or someone, was, okay, well, change a month, and that's probably the best thing for him just to get out of his head. And in May, he was lights out great. 303 average, mm-hmm. 408 on base, 576 slugging, 984 OPS.
Like, all right, he's back.
Like, that's the guy that's back. That's the guy that you count on to be one of the pillars offensively for this. And then in June, he falls off a bit. 785 OPS. July, he's been a complete disaster. 156 slugging, which I look at and it's like comically awful. 378 OPS. And if it was like, if he hadn't have had that hot stretch in there, I probably would have gone with Patrick's point of, okay, well, you look such and such date. He's had a month of pretty damn good, solid playing of baseball. So I think it's either fatigue, that injury, combination of both, because he just does not, eye test wise, numbers aside, eye test wise, he does not look like the same guy to me, and I'm curious how long that might go on for.
My memory's failing me, which it tends to do on occasion. I'm trying to tell
right.
When's the last time he batted leadoff?
Rizzo?
Yeah. I feel like it's been a little while, and that's normally Joe's quick fix for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where he's, okay, you know, Riz is kind of struggling a little bit.
He hit the leadoff homer against the Rockies this year.
Yeah, and that
remember, it was a night that the wind was
2-ish months ago.
I feel like that was
wasn't that in May? Yeah,
it was.
That was
the Rockies.
When he really got off and running in May.
I only remember this because it was score night at the suite. So a bunch of us went down there,
mm-hmm.
and it was NBA playoffs night. It was game one of the Cavs and the Raptors.
Okay.
Because a lot of guys were watching that instead, and Rizzo hit a pop-up of epic proportions that should have been circle the six on your scorecard because it should have been a fly out to the shortstop, and it caught the jet stream and carried all the way to the basket.
Thing was Sandbergian proportions.
Oh, my God. It was like 40-plus miles an hour out, and that thing just hit the jet stream and carried and carried and carried, and you're like, the left fielder's coming in, and then the left fielder ends up running back, and like, how the hell did that get out?
Ryan Sandberg,
I don't know if he's done it since.
Power, but it just to diverge for a second, Ryan Sandberg had legit power, but for me as a kid and my early memories watching Cubs baseball were Andre Dawson had the truly big bat and Ryan Sandberg was just the guy who could catch the jet stream and barely get it out of Wrigley Field, because that for me in my early time and watching the Cubs more closely was what I tended to see him do. The wind would just somehow carry the ball out of the yard for Sandberg in a way that it always didn't seem to do for everybody else. That is my Sandbergian thing I meant when you were making that comment a moment ago, is a Sandbergian home run, because at the end of his career, it seemed to be how a lot of, I'm not even going to call him jacks, how a lot of his dingers, how a lot of his pop-up home runs tended to come.
Yeah, and putting a dent, I guess, in the basket in right or left field there.
Uh-huh.
I remember watching a Sunday night game a few years ago. Joe Morgan was still on the call. And Joe Morgan used to he always get criticized because he'd either make crap up, he always had a vendetta against somebody, and he always, the belief that he hated Ryan Sandberg and couldn't stand him. But I forget who the Cubs were playing, not that it's important, but that he got called out on saying that, oh, well, the basket the Cubs put in, and they used to call that Ernie Banks Highway. And I forget, was I working with Murph at the time? And Murph did this whole deep dive into it and broke down. He's like, Joe Morgan's wrong for this, this, and this. And we're playing the clips back the next day, and turns out that Banks hit all these home runs into the supposed basket that Morgan was citing the night before. The basket was only around for like a year that Banks was there, and Banks hit like only 12 home runs or something at Wrigley Field this year. So all this stuff that was being made up by Morgan the night before, Murph is just exploiting. And I'm like, oh my God, this is gold. Just a crap fest all over Joe Morgan, and just throwing away all the crap that he had to say on that. But that's what always kind of pops into the mind when you think of like the Wrigley Field home run or sneaking into the basket. I'm like, hey, when Joe Morgan was making crap up. 312-644-6767. We're talking Anthony Rizzo here, Lockport John, next up tonight on The Score. What's up, John?
Good to hear talk to you guys. One thing that is a variable that I haven't heard anyone mention is the fact that we have a new hitting coach. And I'm not saying that he may not be injured, but is it possible that the two of them don't click, and maybe that could be part of the reason that he's not hitting as well this year?
Possible, sure. I mean, anything's possible, John. Appreciate the telephone call. My thought on that is what we've seen the Cubs' approach be in not swinging for the fences, putting the ball in play. I would argue that Anthony Rizzo is probably the hitter in this lineup that's done that most of his career.
Right. He's been that guy.
You've seen him. It's been well noted how much he chokes up when he gets down in a count, how much he does that, shortens his swing, put the ball in play approach, that I don't look at it in kind of like the Chili Davis philosophy that's been here. Rizzo's the one I look at pretty much the least in that lineup to be affected by any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely agreed. I don't think that there's a huge change to Rizzo's approach that really needed to take place with Chili Davis coming in. Now a guy like Javi Baez, he's still not getting a whole lot of walks, but his approach at the plate seems improved and making more contact. That would be a guy who I would say is a better example of a more of a change philosophically in his approach at the plate than where Rizzo was before Chili Davis got here this year. So I think it's a worthwhile thought, again, just in this kind of thought exercise of trying to figure out what in the world could be going on with Anthony Rizzo. Because, again, it's not like he was great for most of the year, but the month of July has just been awful. It has just been terrible, no good, very bad Rizzo. And it's to a degree that we're not used to seeing, even by comparison to slumps that have happened at other stretches since he's been a Cub.
Anthony Rizzo is terrible, no good, very bad month. That's what we're going to have the children's
that's
book
July
that's going to be.
That's what July has turned
back
into.
Back on July of 2018 in a few weeks or months, possibly. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. It's Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron with you up until the top of the hour when Julie DeCaro will be here on the Score airwaves. Speaking of Anthony Rizzo, there was a national baseball expert of the most epic proportions on these very airwaves on 670 The Score today. Had thoughts by not just himself, but some of the scouts that he has spoken to. And is there long-term concern for Anthony Rizzo? We'll play that for you next. React to it as well on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. 922, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It is Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron with you up until the top of the hour tonight. Speaking on some Anthony Rizzo struggles, 312-644-6767. You brought up a question about an hour or so ago to Fran Charles from MLB Network that I want to run by our audience as well. Before that, though, Jason Stark is one of the more respected baseball national writers in the entire country. Did work for a long time at ESPN, now working for The Athletic. You always know him for breaking down numbers, a ton of trivia that he has given during radio interviews.
If baseball
you
nerd.
Feed, yeah, I think that I think is that a perfect fits. Description.
Yeah.
Baseball nerd, extremely nice baseball nerd is like what the bio for one Jason Stark would be. He was on with his weekly appearance with Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins earlier today.
Better be
was
nice,
asked
nerd.
About the struggles of one Anthony Rizzo, what he's seen, maybe more importantly, what he's heard. Here's what Jason Stark had to say.
This is a hard one. He's not the same. I mean, the teams that go through there, the scouts that go through there, continuously comment on this about how easily he can be pitched to for the most part. And that's not the guy that I remember. It certainly is enough to make you wonder. I think I've used this line to you guys before. I forgot to graduate from medical school this week, so it's really a hard area to get into.
Can you shed any more light on what the scouts are saying in terms of like where he's easy to pitch to? Because, I mean, yeah, the numbers are non-Rizzo-esque, right? He's got a 727 OPS, but like, what other specifics are they saying about why it's so easy to get him out?
I mean, just not handling the good fastball. Chasing those fastballs up in the zone that, you know, he's a guy who used to be incredibly disciplined about what he could and couldn't hit and what he would and wouldn't swing at. Cheating, chasing, more than we've seen in the past. That's a sign of a guy who knows that he's not quite right, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And like we've speculated about injuries because he did have the back thing early and back issues linger. So like that's why it's not just pulling it out of thin air or not graduating from medical school. It's he did take time off because of the back earlier in the year.
And guys in all sports who have back issues, that's one of those areas just always be careful, always be wary, always wonder if something's up because what sport can you play at your best if your back hurts? I can't think of any.
That's Jason Stark earlier today. Danny Parkins, Dan McNeil, the afternoon show here on The Score. He joins them every Thursday afternoon, 3:40 p.m. That's a guy that's informed. That's a guy that's connected, speaking to scouts. What do they see? What are the guys that know best seeing Anthony Rizzo right now? And if it's a fastball of any quality, he's not hitting it, is what they say. And I thought that was interesting from Jason Stark. I'll take your reaction to that at 312-644-6767. Yeah, he's not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. Anthony's not a doctor. But I can tell just by watching, it appears something's not right. Maybe it's mental. Maybe he's mentally fatigued from what has been a crazy whirlwind year for him. No doubt about it. Maybe that part is wearing on him a little bit, and he takes it to the field more than you've seen him take it to the field before. It just doesn't look like, based off of this week in San Francisco, I mean, I struggle to think it's as simple as just being mental, though, in that a pickoff, a normal pickoff attempt, he can't get in front of it results in a run. The ground ball yesterday that I've never seen him look that slow on, you add some of this up, you add the struggles offensively, you add the incredible decline, I mean, off the side of a cliff decline offensively so far for Rizzo this year. And it points that it feels like something just simply is not right with him. And my question becomes of all right, well, how much can he be counted on to turn it around in the second half? Is it as simple as a couple days off, mental rest for the back, and he comes out guns a-blazing in the second half of the season, post-All-Star break part of the season? It's not as simple as that being the solution to me. If that's the solution, I don't know if – I mean – I have trouble thinking it's not a bigger issue than just a little bit of fatigue or anything like that.
And just looking at the text line, which can sometimes be a mistake, but there's some observations here and folks wondering about the mental state of Anthony Rizzo as it relates to being married. And there have been some recent life developments between him being married, between the Parkland shooting from, you know, before the baseball season began, and him, you know, going back there and trying to support the victims and the families that were involved in that. It's difficult to speculate on how much, if any, effect that something like that still has on him. You know, from my personal experience as a guy who got married during my career as a professional athlete, it didn't negatively affect me. I mean, I think there can be a number of things in your home life or personal problems arise that can affect you in any personal spectrum, any professional light that you may actually work, regardless of what your career is. You know, you think back to, I think of Ray Allen, and I think it was in one of his last years in Boston with the Celtics, I think, where he just went into this horrific shoot. Or no, I'm sorry, it wasn't Ray Allen. It was Derek Fisher. Derek Fisher's the guy I'm thinking of, where he went into this horrific shooting slump, and it turned out that his daughter was having these very dire health issues, and no one knew about it at the time, and everybody was trying to figure out what was going on with him. And then turns out, you know, you find out after the season that, oh, there were some personal issues going on. And actually, maybe Ray Allen had his own separate thing too. Or I don't think I'm getting the two things conflated. I think Derek Fisher and Ray Allen both had health issues.
Well, the Derek Fisher one I remember because it was, I believe, during the playoffs when he was with the Jazz. And his daughter either had a surgery performed in the morning. There was a crazy story with the timing of it that either it was the night before and he made it back for a day game the next day or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, I don't know if it was a shooting slump ahead of that, but I know there was the crazy travel story of him getting to play in a playoff game very quickly after a procedure was performed on his daughter.
And so an example like that would be something that folks aren't aware of in the moment, and then you find out later and you kind of look at it, well, okay, in retrospect, it all makes sense because you have this personal tribulation that's happening at home. And so, yes, it would affect your level of focus, your level of preparation going into trying to compete at the highest level of athletics. So if there's something like that in Anthony Rizzo's personal life, then maybe we find out about it later, maybe we don't. Not everything in an athlete's personal life up coming into the public spectrum. But if there is something like that, then it would be something that explains his recent struggles. Who knows? My immediate jump wouldn't be, you know, because Tony Romo, every time Tony Romo dated someone and he threw an interception, then they blame
Jessica Simpson's
new girlfriend.
Fault. It was Carrie Underwood's fault. It was whoever else's fault.
I'm not going to jump to immediately saying that because Rizzo is now married, that's why he's struggling at the plate. That, to me, is not my immediate thought that makes a lot of sense for why he would be struggling at the plate. Hopefully he's happily married, and hopefully his wife is having a positive effect on what he would be able to do at the professional level. I know that was the impact my wife has had on my career in a number of different ways. So hopefully Anthony Rizzo's in that position too. But there's a lot of folks on the text line trying to blame Rizzo's wife, and I don't know. I've never met Anthony Rizzo's wife. I have no idea what their marriage is like. When I see them in public, they seem fairly happy. You know, when you see clips of them together out just doing stuff. So who knows? Because I don't know the guy or his lovely bride. But there's a lot of folks on the text line speculating about that. So that would not be the first thing that I would jump to in thinking that his wife is to blame.
Yeah, I don't tend to jump to that conclusion. I will say professionally, when I got married, there was literally no change. When I got married and had lived with my then fiance, previously girlfriend.
But look at you. You're about to host in the afternoon.
That's
don't tell
right.
me Ash has nothing to do with that.
I'm just saying, like, in terms of bringing it to work, nothing.
You are so much better
changed.
On the air now than you were before you got married.
You're probably right.
Doubt
because
my mind.
She's brought a hell of a lot more good than anything else to me. But like, when everyone, as soon as you get married, and the question's like, oh my God, is it different being married? And it's like, no, not in the least bit. It's like, we've lived together for multiple years now.
Living
we've been dating
sin.
For 6 years. Like, no, it's not different at all. Like, if anything, it's okay. I guess it's a relief because the stress of planning a wedding in 3.5 months or whatever we did is
I'll
over.
Do it.
Like, it's great. Like,
it's
nope, there's nothing else that's different. Like, slept in the same bed before, we do now. Like, lived together before, we do now. We wear a ring and my left hand gets distracted because there's a shiny thing on it. And that's the only difference. So, yeah.
You heathen.
And I don't know if Anthony Rizzo's actually married. I know he got engaged last year. There was, like, the Instagram or Facebook post or whatever that came out last year.
He is not married yet.
He's not married yet?
Okay.
So
we definitely
can't blame
his wife because he doesn't
then.
Have a wife.
Right. Yeah, what are you possibly thinking? No, it's can't blame it on that if it didn't happen. So I guess we'll just have to keep digging deeper and deeper into what's causing Anthony Rizzo's struggles at the plate.
Just get him on a couch, throw his feet up, play some soft music like they do it. You've probably been to a bunch of therapy in your life. What do they do in therapy sessions?
It's music. What kind of therapist do you go to where they play music?
Like, that's not what they do?
No. You sit on a couch and you spill the beans about everything.
Herb, what does your therapist do?
What's a therapist?
Jen, am I the only therapist goer here?
Yeah, I'm not going to.
No?
Nope.
Good for you. I'll tell you that.
I think it's great for you. You should have an outlet to go and vent, to feel safe, where you're not going to be judged, and just to say whatever in the world is on your mind.
It's like old school when they ask Will Ferrell, his character in old school, and they're like, all right, so this is the safe zone. This is the free zone. What can you tell us you're thinking about this marriage? And he proceeds to tell how he was thinking of the waitress's underwear at dinner the other night at Olive Garden, and it causes the awkward tension. Like, I will say that when I've gone to a therapist, I've never felt that open with anything.
Okay.
Like, it's like, all right, I will say
never
it to a degree
that
on
comfortable
things,
with
but I'm
before.
Still going to be reserved. And I don't care how open you're supposed to be. There are some things that I am going to keep to myself, no matter how much of a safe zone you try to make me feel like I'm in.
Keep some cards close to the vest.
You
just
are
just
correct.
A little bit there.
Yes.
That probably
like,
makes
there
sense.
Are some things that are personal here, and you're not going to get to the bottom of them. Like how you can sniff that out. Of all things to sniff out, you've definitely been to one. What have I shown that I'm the one that has to go to a therapist? Mind you are 100% correct.
You will have something to talk to Danny Mac about tomorrow.
You're damn
There's
right.
No doubt about that.
Breaking down couch time 1-6 tomorrow afternoon on the score. 312-644-6767. That awkward transition being brought to you by Spot Hero, and I'm sure they're proud of it. And finally, here's
it
a way you can
be.
Save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. 312-644-6767. That's the number that Ray called. Ray's in Orland Park, and he's up on the score. What's up, Ray?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I wanted to point out that perhaps Rizzo's struggles is a bit of a mirage because of how bad his first month was with the OPS of in the mid-400s. If you look at his May OPS, it was 984, and so that's pretty awesome for a player to have that. And his June wasn't too shabby at just under 800. I know 800 is kind of the marking point, but he's just had some ups and downs, and we're catching him on a down right now with that bad game he had with the errors. And you know, it's baseball, and we want to look at everything. And, you know, maybe the week off will give him that extra back strength he needs, and we'll see another 850 OPS, and all of a sudden he'll look a little better. But his first month was so bad. If remember a few years ago, it might have been his second or third season, he had a similar start where his first month really dragged down his stats. So He's maybe one of those slow starters that just needs to get warmed up like Sandberg was back in the 80s and 90s. So Ray, that's what I got for you.
All right, thank you, Ray. I would take that and take it for being worth more, but, I mean, he had a truly outstanding May, OPS 984. He struggled out of the gate, 431 his first month. 785, like if 800 is the magic number to be acceptable, like if you're supposed to be a Rizzo type guy where you're chasing more 900, it's not like 785 is anything special either there. So it's been a weird year for him, but it's been very much a nothing special year for him at the same time. Like when you take it all into consideration and break that all down. So I think it's just, like I said, I tend to think that it's either fatigue or something along those lines, and hopefully it can be fixed as best it can here during the All-Star break. I mean, you get a day off. The Cubs have had a little bit more time off here in the last week and a half, 2 days off during 4th of July week. You get a day off before 3 games against San Diego. The All-Star break will hopefully be beneficial, so that will all go in there as well. So 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call on that. You asked something earlier to our guest, Fran Charles, from MLB Network about kind of the skills competition of All-Star games. Going to share that conversation with you, get that into that a little bit here before 10 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, you left out the best part of that whole thing. Probably a wise idea. Thank you very much for the old school. Though. Coming back from break, Nick Shepkowski, Anthony Heron with you. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. A lot of people on the text line blaming Anthony Rizzo's struggles because he's gone and gotten engaged. That's their thinking. Or he got married. Well, he didn't actually get married yet, at least according to everything online. So hard to blame that for him and his offensive struggles so far this year. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Heron with you till the top of the hour. Julie DeCaro will be here this evening from 10 until midnight tonight. You mentioned earlier today, we had Fran Charles on tonight from MLB Network, broke down the first half of the MLB season with him, and you asked him a question about which of his like skills competitions in the All-Star games was his favorite, and kind of got into the, was it the dunk contest, is it the home run derby, which does more for you? And he gave a long-winded answer and eventually said that Major League Baseball, watching guys hit a home run, it's so much and so many times over and over again, really did it for him, fascinated him. To me, to answer your question, when you asked me off the air before the show, mine's the skills competition in the NHL.
Really?
Because I can turn it on, and it doesn't have to be any player I've ever known a thing about, but just because of the variety of it. Like baseball, you're trying to hit home runs, and that's the mission of the whole thing. Mm. Slam dunk competition, go and do slam dunks in crazy ways, and I don't know, that's kind of worn off for me in the last few years. It just has kind of lost the novelty of it. Like, you have a variety of things that these NHL players are doing. It's all the ultimate saves competition. You have the best players trying to score on the best goalies, and the goalies trying to stop them. You get graded that way. Goes the accurate shooting, to the hardest shot, to the fastest skater. It's just event after event after event after event instead of just the same thing over and over and over again for 2 hours or whatever it ends up being.
You know what I'd be curious about? I think I would actually enjoy that. Probably no manager or agent, as Fran Charles kind of quipped about the agents in the NFL and their limited skills competitions. I'd be curious to see some of the hardest throwers in baseball. Just go out there and see what could they really crank the gun up to. You know, just give them all, like, you know, let them go warm up and give them all, whatever, 5 pitches or something like that, just to see, you know, who can top 100, or maybe just your average, who can top 102? Can somebody hit 105 when they're not really worried about a really succinct target? Just go ahead and rear it back. That's one thing that, you know, just as far as a baseball skill that stands out. Because when you think about it, there's a lot of guys who could likely throw certainly harder, maybe even in some cases much harder on the gun than what they do, because there's such precision that's necessary to hit certain spots and get movement when you're actually facing a high-level batter in the batter's box. I just wonder, you know, I don't know, could Aroldis Chapman hit 107 on the gun or something like that if he didn't really care exactly where the ball went, or if he wasn't trying to put a little tail on it at the end? Something like that would actually interest me, but I wonder if just folks would worry about throwing an elbow out, throwing a shoulder out.
Sure, no doubt like it would. Yeah. You have the multi-million-dollar contracts.
Uh-huh.
And you have something as crazy as trying to throw 107 or throw as hard on the gun as physically possible. I'm sure that would never happen. But, yeah, it'd be cool if you could do, like, a baseball, like, accurate throw competition. Mm. I don't know, fastest guy running first to third, something like that, to possibly do it.
Yeah,
somewhere
like an
along
NL
those
versus
lines.
AL relay race.
Yeah, like something cool like that. Like, I think that would be... Like that's when I look for like the skills competitions, the slam dunk contest and 3-point contest. It's like, okay, there's two things for the NBA. That doesn't really do it for me. They have like the skills competition,
little, yeah,
like pass
the
ball into the basket or whatever the heck it is that they do.
And they got to hit the layup.
They always get like the old timer out there. Like Scottie Pippen's been out there. They get some living legend from the teams that are participating. And it's like, I don't know. That one just doesn't do it for me. Like, it's the NHL because it doesn't matter who the player is. It's just, I guess, different. And it's, okay, well, this is cool because it's unique or whatever else.
But I'm far less likely to know who the NHL player is anyway. That's just kind of where my overall level of hockey interest slash knowledge is, where I'm going to know who the best guys are. I'm going to know what the best teams are doing. I'm certainly going to know what's happening with the Blackhawks. And then aside from that, just watching the NHL skills competition, I'm not really going to know a lot of those guys just by name. Certainly not by, you know, watching their sweater and knowing what numbers on the back of it or something like that. So,
I think that's why I like it maybe more. It's just because of the randomness, and it's just like you flip it on and, okay, it's as simple as who can hit the targets with the least amount of shots, who can get around the rink the fastest, who can save the most shots or block the most slap shots, whatever the heck it is. And it's like, I don't really know. My hockey depth across the league, the knowledge of it isn't what it is for the rest of the leagues that there are in sports. But watching, I don't know, just hockey players do something you're totally not used to seeing them do as part of their game, at least like unguarded attempts at the net or just skating as fast as you can without actually trying to track down a defender or on a breakaway. Like just seeing like the uniqueness of that, I think it's pretty I enjoy it, and I don't need like a name attached to it or a certain jersey or logo attached to it to be like, this is cool. And it's just kind of different and kind of like the same reason that for whatever you're flipping through channels and you stumble into the X Games and it's like, okay, well, for 15 or 20 minutes, this is different and it's a competition and I'm interested in it, not because I'm ever going to skateboard or snowboard or do something crazy on a snowmobile, just because it's different, it's competition, and it's on. And that's kind of like why I like the skills competition NHL-wise versus, I guess, the other ones.
But when I think about what stands out to me in my memory, I guess that's part of where, you know, the question first came from, is just thinking about, you know, Home Run Derby's obviously coming up. And to me, thinking back to, like, the year Sammy Sosa, obviously, the year he was in Atlanta, and the show he put on where it felt like every home run he hit went over 500 feet, and just the contact and the sound, the explosion that his bat, the noise that his bat made when it made contact with the ball and the way it just exploded out of the yard time and time again. And if I'm remembering correctly, whatever year that was, sometime probably early 2000s, the Home Run Derby in Atlanta. And I think the first half of that season, he was just kind of okay. And, you know, this brings me to part of the thing where people are worried about, you know, does the Home Run Derby mess up certain guys' swings and do you get fatigued and all this stuff? That particular year, now, you know, Sammy had allegedly had some enhancements that helped him not get fatigued in the Home Run Derby and not be fatigued for the whole second half of the season. But when you think about it, he actually, that vaulted him. Winning that Home Run Derby and being so hot that night and the crowd in Atlanta chanting his name, Sammy, Sammy. And that kind of historic performance he had in that derby, that vaulted him through the second half of the season. I don't remember if it was like 2001 or something like that, where he just went off in Atlanta. That, to me, that's a Home Run Derby performance that stands out. Thinking back to Frank Thomas in the 90s, him and King Griffey Jr. had like a nice duel one year. I want to say it was sometime early to mid-90s where Frank and Jr. were going at it in a Home Run Derby.
I
want to
say that was in Pittsburgh, 94, okay. I want to say that one was. Because I remember Frank Thomas hitting the sign. I forget who the player was, but they had Three Rivers Stadium, they had a banner for every player that was an all-star.
Was it Will Clark?
It might have been.
I feel like it was maybe Will Clark, where there was this mammoth home run that Frank hit. And I don't even think he won the Derby, but that moment stood out. Yeah, because Junior won like a couple of Junior won like two or three. I think at one point he won them back to back. Was it three total that he won?
He won in 94, 98, and 99.
And which one was it where he and Frank were going at it, but Frank had like the shot of the night?
94 in Pittsburgh, like Shep was talking about. And okay. Then Frank won it the next year.
Yeah, just found that. Yeah, he won it in Texas. I think he beat our Frank. How the hell do you remember it was Will Clark? You just watched that video today. I just pulled up the video here. It's Will Clark signed that he smokes the hell out of.
Yeah.
You know, like Ruben Sierra in the dugouts, the first guy they show, like, oh my God. Standing ovation from like the third filled up.
Well, until Will Clark
Ken
went
Caminiti off. Ken Caminiti fully roided at the time.
Until
rest
Clark
in peace,
went off in the
for,
postseason when I was watching. That was like my only association with Will Clark before watching him go off in the playoffs that year was, oh yeah, that's the guy on the sign that Frank hit.
Yeah, Will Clark. God, that's a blast from the past. Killing the Cubs in 89 in the postseason. He would have been, I think, American League by then. Probably a Texas Ranger by then, I want to say. That's a – when you go back and look at kind of his career, that's a ridiculously good career that maybe didn't get the appreciation it deserved when he retired. And Will Clark, also a grade-A ass wipe based off of everyone that ever dealt with him.
The Bill Laimbeer of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, pretty much. Red ass to the nth degree. Romeoville Norm has thoughts on these skills competitions. What's up tonight, Norm?
Norm.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. What's up, Norm?
Hey, I took off. I'm not on speaker anymore, so I'm good.
Well, that's good.
Thank you.
You did what our guy Herbie Lawrence asked of you.
Anthony, you hit on something great about the pitchers with their speed.
You'd be interested
about
in that?
Having a competition with pitchers that recently retired to see just how fast they could throw the first year after they're retired. That's it.
To see who still got it.
Right, exactly.
Who can still rear back and just throw a heater. Just give them the heater. Just take it right down the pipe.
Did you see a Ferguson Jenkins or a Bob Gibson doing that a year after they retired? Sure they could.
Yeah, especially with the salaries the players were making back in those days. I don't know if we'd get a lot of guys to participate in it now, but I'd watch it. If people were willing to do that, I'd watch it.
Like if
Nolan Ryan would do it. Or if,
remember Nolan Ryan?
Well,
I do.
Heard of him.
I do.
Appreciate the telephone call there, Norm. Yeah, I don't know how many people are going to be signing up to watch the old timers throw as hard as they can. Help get Dennis Eckersley out. Don't know if he's thrown a baseball in the last 15 or 20 years, but get him out and see if he can go about and.
If Roger Clemens strolled on out there, you'd watch him.
Yeah, right.
You'd check it out. You see if the Rockets still had it. See if he was still all HGH'd up.
That's right. Yeah. See whatever the heck. Drug
see,
under
his
the
wife
sun.
Wife came out there and threw like 95 miles an
right.
hour too.
Yeah. Tigers just draft his son out of Texas. I forget. I think it was the Tigers that just drafted
was
his
it?
Kid. Yeah. Mike Chen's giving me a thumbs up. Last call of the night, really quickly, the South Side. Ed's been holding, has thoughts on our hardest pitch competition. What's up, Ed?
Hey, how you guys doing? Here's a novel idea. Take a pitching machine and crank it up to 150 or whatever and see who can hit the fastest fastball by using machines your novice gets hurt throwing.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, it could be fun to see. Can someone turn around on a 110-mile-an-hour pitch, 112? It'd be fun. I also am not standing in the box. I know the machines are supposed to be trusted.
No.
I'm not signing up to be the guy, no matter how much protective gear you have on me, to face the 115-mile-an-hour fastball or whatever
it is. I stood in there just against a college pitcher one time, and this guy wasn't known for bringing the heat.
Like velocity.
And that was just frightening. Just and whatever he was throwing, probably low 90s, and it was just scary just standing in the batter's box with him throwing at that speed, let alone 110 or whatever we can get a machine cranked up to do. I got no interest in that.
Yeah.
Not personally.
Right. Like if you go to the fast batting cage, even now when you haven't played baseball in a couple of years, you haven't played baseball in dozens of years in my case, like you see that thing get cranked up and it's like, dear Jesus. It takes an adjustment period of like even getting a little bit of wood on it, let alone making solid contact on it, just to follow a couple off. It takes takes a few go-throughs in order to make that work. Music means we got to go. Thank you tonight to our guests, Fran Charles from MLB Network. Herb Lawrence and Mike Chen are producers. For Anthony Heron, I'm Nick Shepkowski. Julie DeCaro is coming up next.
Hey, Shep.
What's up?
Have fun tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you. 1 to 6 p.m. Me and Dan McNeil doing afternoon drive. Catch that right here on The Score. Julie DeCaro's next right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.